Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, joining us now, as he does every Thursday, though he was gracious enough to join us a bit later today since we did take the press conference from the FBI regarding the terrorist attack in New Orleans. Joining us now is Major Garrett, CBS Chief Washington Correspondent. Major, Happy New Year. Thanks for being so flexible today.
Sure, no problem. It's been a very busy news week, and I was anchoring all of our special report coverage yesterday and the evening news all this week for Nora O'Donnell. So it's been a very hectic and troubling start to the new year.
Yeah, well, let's start with that, Major. We did hear from the press conference in New Orleans. What about at the Capitol and the discussions this has created within the Capitol, the FBI, about U.S. citizens being radicalized to making sure the inauguration is secure?
So the first point is not new. The radicalization of Americans has been something that the U.S. intelligence community, the FBI, local law enforcement have been dealing with essentially post 9/11, but it ramped up more considerably after the rise of ISIS in Iraq and northern Syria. And we don't know exactly how and what velocity, meaning at what rate, this suspect, now dead, became radicalized. But according to the FBI press conference this morning, having reviewed the videos, which President Biden was the first to tell the country about in his remarks from Camp David last night, made it pretty clear radicalization is real. It was something that he not only thought about but articulated. Why he chose Bourbon Street, why he chose New Orleans, we don't know. And the other big part of the press conference, of course, this morning was explaining how things change in 24 hours in a wide-ranging investigation. I was on the air all day yesterday afternoon, listening carefully to the assistant FBI special agent in New Orleans and the mayor and the police chief say there are accomplices. We need to be on the alert for accomplices, and we can't guarantee immediate public safety. Well, lots of things were learned in the intervening 24 hours or so. And now they believe and have declared, based on what they know at present, lone wolf, single actor, no accomplices, and things are therefore safer in New Orleans than they were assumed to have been yesterday afternoon. Those are the two big developments. As for the United States Capitol, look, everything about the United States Capitol dealing with January 6th coming up was going to be a high-security, high-profile event, the inauguration, of course. Now the state funeral and the lying in state in the Capitol Rotunda of the 39th President of the United States, Jimmy Carter, that will add to that matrix of security preparations and concerns. But there are security concerns in Washington every day, and there have been basically since 9/11. That never ends. That never stops. It becomes less visible, less obvious, and it certainly ramps up and becomes much more conspicuous around these significant events. The only other thing I would add to that is there's another layer, which is threats to members of Congress in a very intense political environment. That's increased dramatically in the last 2 years. That's the one thing that is different than any other preparations for state funeral, National Day of Mourning, inauguration, or anything like that. And that's also part of the security matrix here in the nation's capital.
You know, Major, I wanted to ask you about that fact of it seemed like before the election, everybody was kind of on edge of depending on it really didn't matter, I guess, of which way the election went. We were kind of expecting something really bad to happen, that people were very on edge. But it felt like since the election, there's been a calm, at least here in the Midwest. I'm curious about there. It just doesn't seem like people are as on edge as they used to be. Is that a Midwestern feel? Is it different on the coast than it is here?
No, I think it's a powerfully important Midwestern insight into the rest of the country. Look, we were all on edge. I would say we collectively, meaning certainly those who I was talking to in election preparation, election administration, county clerks, state secretaries, secretaries of state, County officials were nervous about the possibility of violence on Election Day or violence leading up to Election Day or possibly violence or the threat of violence at counting centers. None of that happened. The election went smoothly. The result was decisive and accepted. And the country has gone back to where it used to be, moving on from an election. There are disappointed Americans. There are enthusiastic Americans, very similar to previous elections, excepting, of course, the outlier, the unforgettable outlier of 2020, when an election was contested, even though it was fairly conducted and legally applied. We're now back to where we used to be. That's a good thing for the country. It's a very good thing. But this issue that members of Congress are dealing with hasn't subsided. Individual members of Congress, not really well-known members of Congress, not super important people who run committees or have leadership positions, have found themselves either via social media or texts or emails or phone calls to their offices, they or them their families subjected to all sorts of harsh language, threatening language, and that has captured, of course, their attention and the attention of the Capitol Police. So that's one distinct difference from this otherwise calming and much to be celebrated acceptance of the election and a nation moving on.
Major, moving to now Congress and specifically Senator Josh Hawley, he is hoping to ban stock trading among congressional members, has bipartisan support for this bill. What do you think the chances are that this actually passes?
The possibility of it passing and being signed into law are good if two things happen. Trump endorses it and Trump prioritizes it. Neither of those two things have happened. They both could, and if they do, chances go up exponentially. I emphasize Trump endorsing it, meaning really endorsing it, being visible on it, and second, prioritizing it. And the prioritization matters a great deal because this incoming Trump administration has a long to-do list that it has articulated to the country. And we're going to see tomorrow here in the nation's capital a look into the ability of House Republicans to properly organize themselves to prepare for that agenda. What do I mean by that? Well, there's going to be a vote tomorrow, a not insignificant vote for the House Speaker. Republicans are the majority party by a historically slender margin. If there is any trouble for Mike Johnson being reelected as Speaker of the House of Representatives under Republican control, that will not augur well for the future of the Trump agenda. So a lot more than whether Mike Johnson is a Speaker of the House is going to be decided tomorrow. Among the things that are going to be decided is he going to be Speaker? How smooth is that process? And does the smoothness or lack of smoothness of that process tell the president incoming and the country at large how difficult it will be for Republicans to hold together in pursuit of and on behalf of that Trump agenda?
Well, talking about Trump actually putting his thumb on the scale, he did that for Mike Johnson. It came out and said that he has my full support. It sounds like there's really only a couple Republicans that are trying to throw a fly in the ointment here. Am I missing something?
No, but the only problem is that's all you need is two.
That's true. These days we're down to that razor thin of a margin, but I would think that those guys are going to get pummeled by the rest of their cohorts if they continue to hold this up, because the Republicans cannot have another dumpster fire show like they had when the former speaker got thrown out.
And there's an even more practical reason for Republicans to hold together. Quite separate from the agenda and how much you are or are not on board as an individual Republican member of the House of Representatives. If there's no speaker, that vastly complicates the certification of President-elect Trump's victory on January 6th. The House needs to be in session. For the House to be in session, it needs a speaker. Now, I wouldn't derail it, but it would vastly complicate it, and the optics around it would be miserable. Miserable.
Right.
The country would watch the certification of a presidential election with a dysfunctional House of Representatives because the majority party, theoretically aligned with that incoming president, can't get itself organized. That would be bad, and I believe that is the core message from President-elect Trump's team to any wayward House Republicans. Look, you can take things up with Mike Johnson later, but do not in any way, shape, or form delay, distract from, or in any way interfere with what President-elect Trump has earned, which is a rapid, clear-cut certification of that election on January 6th.
Yeah, and it seems one of the more outspoken members is Representative Thomas Massie out of Kentucky, who said, and I quote, "I don't know how to say this without cussing. If they thought I had no F's to give before, I definitely have no F's to give now."
Yes, so, well, that's where we've sort of gotten to in American political discourse. He didn't need to say that. I didn't need to hear it. You didn't need to have to tap dance around the expletives there. And apparently, expletives generate an aura of authenticity in American political life. I didn't know that was a prerequisite. It certainly wasn't for most of the time I've covered national politics. I fundamentally don't believe that it is. I don't believe using expletives makes you any more or less authentic. It may make you more predictable. And Tom Massie is nothing if not predictable. He's against almost everything that doesn't personally benefit him or politically benefit him. He is a outlier's outlier in the Republican coalition. But, and this is a subset story of the 2024 election, the 2024 election went very well for President-elect Trump. It went relatively well for Senate Republicans. They increased their margin, although they lost a couple of really close races, Nevada and Wisconsin, to be specific. But it was not a good election year for House Republicans. That's why this margin is so narrow. And that's why someone like Tom Massie is invested, whether anyone in the Republican coalition likes it or not, with a kind of power unique to a margin that can only allow two votes to escape the coalition. That means he's powerful every single day, whether you want him to be or not. And someone who is as alienated from the agenda and the political orientation and who wants to talk about it in that offhand, vulgar sort of way, speaking about the agenda of the incoming president, the Speaker of the House, et cetera, puts Republicans on a rocky start.
Major, you know, it's been a long few days for you. Who do you have on the podcast as we let you go?
So Albert Brooks is a really well-known writer and thinker in the space of not self-help, but making yourself a better person and living more happily in the life that you currently exist in. He's not a self-help guru. He's not someone who dispenses sort of dime store psychobabble about how to make a better New Year's resolution. He really does think seriously and studies the science, the internal science, biochemical and otherwise, of what makes people happy, what makes people unhappy, and the patterns to move yourself in a happier direction. Well, it's been a tough week already. We recorded the show a week ago in anticipation of the week of New Year's. So in honor of the week of New Year's and a lot of collective thinking people generally tend toward about how to make things a little bit better and brighter in their life, Albert Brooks is part of our conversation this week.
He is CBS Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett. Thanks for joining us, Major.
Have a great week, everybody.
Talk to you next week. That is Major Garrett. Yeah, Albert Brooks, I think he's the one that I've read several times in The Atlantic.
He's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. He's good. So he's Mike Elam. Also very good. Thank you for joining us. We've got a few more minutes before we hand things over to the Dave Glover Show.
There's time?
It's flown by.
Let's go.
It's flown by. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.